Introducing the Two-Way V4, where groundbreaking fuel cell technology meets fresh foam cushioning for the ultimate performance. With fuel cell, each step feels explosive, delivering unparalleled energy return. Paired with fresh foam, experience maximum comfort throughout the game. Its lightweight textile upper offers support and breathability without sacrificing agility. Whether you're hitting the clutch shot or locking down the opposition, the Two-Way V4 gives you the tools to play at a high level. Learn more and purchase the Two-Way for yourself at NewBalance.com.
What is up, everybody? Back to the Junkyard Dogcast. I'm Jake Rowe with Dogs 24/7. With me, Kip Adams, Rusty Mansell, also of Dogs 24/7. Let's talk some Georgia football, guys, and we got a full show. We got mailbag second half. Going to dedicate the whole second half to the mailbag. Front side of the show, though, going to talk a little bit of quarterback situation at Georgia. We're also going to give our Wednesday leans on Georgia, South Carolina, kind of how we see that one shaking out here in the middle of the week, and we got picks coming tomorrow. So if you're wanting those, stay tuned until tomorrow. But Rusty, what's the latest you're hearing on Georgia's quarterback situation with Stetson Bennett and JT Daniels? Kirby Smart comes out, what was it, Tuesday night, last night, says neither guy's 100%. Stetson's dealing with some back issues, some back soreness, some back tightness, I guess. But he does say JT Daniels is feeling a lot better. Just got off the SEC conference call with him about an hour ago where he said that JT is much improved and it's getting better there. What is your latest read on that situation?
What a difference a week makes. A week ago, everybody's like, please God, Stetson Bennett's not playing. I mean, it was just like this, that, everything. And now everybody's like, damn, I hope Stetson Bennett can play if JT Daniels can't play. So right. It's kind of funny how me and Kip dealt with that last week, how the trajectory went towards that conversation. But, I read what you wrote this morning, Jake, on the Junkyard and your board post. And I'm kind of along the same lines. I've heard that both guys took reps. I heard Stetson Bennett took the most reps yesterday with the ones, and that's still okay because JT Daniels knows the offense. He knows what the game plan. He knows what they expect out of him if he can play. I've maintained the whole time. I still think this is going to be kind of a game time decision and how it goes because you just don't know where he's going to be in 3 days or something like this. Been very clear. The only thing that can help this is rest. So, you're playing an SEC opponent at night at home. First, this game right here is your first SEC game, South Carolina, undefeated team. So, all the things are there to say, JT, play. But at the end of the day, it's going to be a game time decision, in my opinion. And if he doesn't go, obviously the Georgia staff and I think the Georgia fan base now feels a lot better knowing that Stetson Bennett is a part of this team and he's in that offensive huddle.
All practices are big, but Wednesday, I think you would, most coaching staffs would consider it as kind of that last really normal practice of the week. Even Monday is not necessarily normal. It's kind of a correcting what happened the week before, going over the film. They start working on they start working on the next opponent. Tuesday, full-fledged. Wednesday, full-fledged. And then Thursday, they start backing them off a little bit, start to get into kind of a little bit of recovery mode while still continuing to prepare. And then, obviously, Friday is all recovery, is basically all a kind of a the haze in the barn. Let's get this thing ready mentally. And then Saturday's game day. So a lot still yet decided. This could be a situation where JT feels great today. He gets most of the reps today. He goes on the start Saturday. It could be a situation where they continue to be cautious with this. The one thing I really want to stress here, though, is everything I'm hearing, and this is really trusted information that I can tell you here, they're going to be really cautious with this injury. This isn't something Georgia can afford to be a little bit cautious right now because, South Carolina, the next two opponents, South Carolina and Vanderbilt, both in transition, both teams. I don't like calling anybody inferior, but in terms of the talent, in terms of the roster, both teams very much inferior.
On paper.
Right, yeah, on paper. And, let's face it. If Georgia goes out there, plays well defensively in these two games, it should not give up very much. There's a very good chance Georgia goes the next – there's a very good – better than you would normally say playing two SEC teams in a row – that Georgia can extend its touchdownless streak from 9 quarters to 17 quarters in the next 2 weeks. Okay. Georgia's going to have that opportunity. Is it probable? I probably not, but you know, Georgia's got a chance to play really good defense and win these next two games by playing really good defense. We'll see if they can kind of get that done. Kip, if Georgia does have a decision to make there, and I know it all depends on health, do you think it's best to go ahead and get JT Daniels back in the mix and get him going, maybe even a series or two? Or do you just kind of ride this one out with him and see what it looks like next week?
I think that Georgia will find out today or tomorrow. I think they'll see how JT looks in practice today on Wednesday as we record this show, and then Thursday. And if he's not really close to 100%, I mean, they may bring him out there Saturday just to see how he feels and looks. But it's just like last week. Why would you risk that? You go ahead and get your guys the reps that you know are going to be able to play in the game. So if he can't go out there and practice fully and feel great about it, then I think it's Stetson Bennett that gets the start again. I mean, there were a lot of unknowns last week. Nobody knew what was going on. I think that's kind of the benefit of this UAB game, is now you know what you have, you know, initially at the quarterback position. You know who can, you know, run this offense and put Georgia in a situation to win. So I just don't think the game plan changes until JT Daniels 100%. I think the rotation you saw last week, I mean, you know, I don't know if Carson Beck, you know, was really able to take advantage of the offense, because UAB, you know, initially they were selling out to the run. And by the time Carson came in, they said, you know what, I don't know if we could sell out to the run anymore. We might have to make some adjustments here. And he was the benefactor of UAB making some adjustments out there defensively. But overall, I think as far as reps go, and you know, the game plan was solid, the rotation was solid, I don't think you really change anything. You put Stetson Bennett out there, and if the game is in a good, you know, situation, you continue to rotate Carson in and get him more experience. Now, if JT comes out there today and he's 100%, then this is his team. Now the narrative is all of a sudden switched. Like Rusty said, everyone was worried and maybe upset that Stetson was getting the start. And now the discussion is, if Stetson has another good game or two these next couple of weeks, do we have a quarterback controversy on hand? And guys, I mean, JT Daniels, this is his team if he's healthy, but it's also Stetson Bennett knows that he could take this team where it needs to be until JT Daniels gets healthy. And so I don't think that this coaching staff is going to worry about putting a less than 80 to 90% JT Daniels out in the field the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, I have my doubts as to whether he's going to be truly 100% the rest of the year, because with each passing day, with each passing practice, nobody is. I mean, it's really tough to be 100%. If you've been out there and you've gotten hit a few times, that's going to happen. Now, if you're a quarterback that's kind of, you know, if you're a quarterback or a punter or somebody like that that doesn't really take hits, that doesn't really, you know, deal with the rush and you know, maybe have to take off with it and slide and get popped there too, then maybe you are 100%, but you know, neither Stetson nor JT are right now, according to Kirby Smart. And you know, but I will say this: I don't think there's anything to be concerned about with Stetson. I really don't think there's anything to be long term concerned about right now. Still with JT Daniels, I mean, I think if JT Daniels had to play on Saturday, he'd play. Saturday was the SEC championship game. JT Daniels would play it. Okay. But I think Georgia can afford to be cautious with him right now. And with Stetson Bennett dealing with the back issue, I'm told that he hasn't missed any reps as far as practice goes. He hasn't been limited. And, you know, maybe he's dealing with some soreness there, some moving around. Maybe they're adjusting some things for him to kind of keep that from flaring up. But, you know, it's a treatment deal for both of them. And I think both will be available to play on Saturday night against South Carolina. And listen, this is not out of the realm of possibility. South Carolina comes out there with a really good game plan. You're looking at a, you know, 3-3 or 3-0 or nothing score after the first quarter. You might see JT Daniels come in to give Georgia a spark, you know, with them intending not to play him from the jump there. So there's a lot of different scenarios that can play out, and that's why you need to be over at the Junkyard, because we'll do a pretty good job of telling you what's going on and try to give you the best, most up-to-date information there is. Rusty, Wednesday lean, Georgia, South Carolina. How do you see this one?
I mean, that's same lean I've had Sunday. I mean, this was
preseason.
Yeah, I mean, this is a game that Georgia's clearly better than South Carolina, you know, and I think the South Carolina, you know, I read their board, the Big Spur, those guys do a great job there. The pulse there is let's get through this game, let's try to compete, stay healthy and get ready. They're trying to get the six games, six wins, and that would be a tremendous first year under Shane Beamer, but they're not built for a game like this. This is Georgia's, you know, they're, you know, Shane Beamer said it yesterday, and I think that I may have said this. I think all of us have probably agreed with it. On paper, this is probably the best defense that I can remember Georgia ever having. Just from across the board, I know one of our posters here on our comments here asked us what makes this defense different. I think you got a lot of experience. I think you got a lot of length, a lot of speed, and that thing. But let's be clear. It starts with Jordan Davis, and you can do so much in behind him because you got a big 6'7" tree trunk sitting in the middle that can, oh, by the way, bend. He can move. He can run quarterbacks down sideline to sideline, and it just makes everybody around him that much better. You know, this is a game for South Carolina that you want to come in, you want to compete because they got SEC athletes. Let's not downplay that, but right now, in game three, where Shane Beamer is, they're not built for a game like this. And I fully expect Georgia to handle business Saturday night.
Yeah, I'm interested to get to that question too, Rusty. I've been sitting over here reading it on the side, thinking about that question about Georgia's defense and what makes it different. I watched that South Carolina-East Carolina game, part of it, on Saturday. And early on, I'll tell you this right now. If Georgia comes out and runs the football from the jump, and listen, South Carolina buckled down and then was able to stop East Carolina's run game a lot better as that game went on. But if Georgia's able to come out and run the football early like East Carolina was, this one's going to be a wrap in short order. Okay, it's going to be pretty quick. That's the way I see it. I mean, listen, I think South Carolina might have a chance to come out with its hair on fire, play really well, and kind of keep this game, you know, in check for a little while. But I think ultimately Georgia's going to wear them down. And Georgia's going to beat them up pretty good, and it should. I mean, this is a team in transition. The previous coach staff got fired for a reason. I know Will Muschamp's on Georgia's staff now. He didn't get fired because he's a bad football mind. He got fired because the thing snowballed on him a little bit and kind of got out of hand. And they lost some talent last year. They've got some talent positions, especially running back and defensive line. But the matchup is really tough for South Carolina because they are struggling up front. And you'll talk about what makes this defense different. It's not just Jordan Davis up front. He's got a whole gang of amigos up front, and they're really good up there. And that just, to me, you look back at that Clemson game, Georgia's got a chance to dominate this game like it did that Clemson game up front. And that'll spell bad news for South Carolina because South Carolina's also struggling at quarterback. They're struggling in the passing game. They're just not getting it going right now. And if that continues, Georgia should run away with this one pretty quickly.
What? The one quick thing I'll say, roster-wise, it's really not close. That's just I'm going to say that. Yeah. But what you like if you're a South Carolina fan is how hard those kids are playing.
Right.
They're down 14-0. They can't even really get a first down. And they battle their tails off into a win. And that South Carolina staff knows what they're dealing with right now, turnover, roster, transfers, all those types of things. Just to see those kids play as hard as they did, you know that gives them a little bit of, positivity to understand where they're going. And you look at Sam Pittman year two, what he's done at Arkansas, and certainly South Carolina is hoping that's the trajectory they're going. But I'll tell you this: as far as this game Saturday night, I mean it's a very, very tall task, and you really just kind of hope that game is still a game in the third quarter, and I think you call it a win then for South Carolina.
Multiple early turnovers for South Carolina in that game. They didn't go into tank. So that's something you feel good about as a South Carolina fan. Kip, what's your lean?
Well, I think so far what it's tough to know a lot about South Carolina because, like you said, I mean, they've played Eastern Illinois and they've played Eastern Carolina. And I think, I mean, the one thing you could take from the Eastern Carolina game is that, you know, they've had some adversity. And they've been able to figure some things out about themselves and what maybe their strengths and weaknesses are. But, I mean, it's a team that does have some ball security issues. I mean, they've had three fumbles It's a young team, and that shows the fact that they've had, I think they've had 16 penalties in two games. So going on the road, you know, playing in Athens at night, that's probably going to be an issue for them. I think, you know, you're going to have some flags, and Georgia's probably going to get some free yardage that way that, you know, South Carolina is probably going to put themselves in bad situations with. But, you know, Josh Van is shown he's a playmaker, and he's a guy that I think is going to test Georgia in multiple facets of the game. You know, whether it's their return coverage, you know, whether it's Darion Kendrick and that secondary, you know, Georgia hasn't really been tested downfield, and they haven't really been tested with a guy that can break tackles and get some yards after the catch. And I think Josh Van can do a little bit of everything for you. So they're going to be leaning on him early and often in this game. I don't really think, you know, the ground game, you know, Marshawn Lloyd, it's been kind of some, you know, tough sledding for him so far. I think Juju McDowell's a, you know, an impressive athlete out of Lee County who kind of can do a little bit of everything for you out there. So, you know, he's a guy that, you know, can give you some different looks out there and maybe catch a couple passes, maybe get a couple of tosses out there as well. But I don't think that, you know, offensively South Carolina's going to have the firepower to, I mean, if they get in the double digits, I think it's going to be a win for them. And I think that defensively, they're going to be put to the test. And I just don't think they have the guys out there defensively to cover some of the guys that Georgia's been able to showcase, you know, coming off this UAB game. I think that's really, really going to be an issue for them. So I think that it's going to get away from them pretty early. And I think it's going to be a pretty, pretty rough game for Shane Beamer. And I think his debut in Athens will be one that he probably wants to forget.
You know, one thing, Jake and Kip, you know, we've been doing this a long time with this team and all these Georgia-South Carolina games. You see that Pollock highlight yesterday, and you think about how tough all these games were. I mean, it's really crazy to believe that Georgia's a 31-point favorite in an SEC game against South Carolina. I mean, that tells you kind of the scope of where both teams are right now. But I thought about that this morning. Georgia used to play South Carolina that first game of the year, and, man, it was a nail-biter. I don't care. Lou Holt certainly won his share of games against Georgia. Steve Spurrier did as well. So you look at those games, and right now it's a 31-point margin. That is crazy to me.
For the longest time, it played out differently than you thought it was going to play out.
There were times where
Georgia'd get a blowout, or South Carolina had one or two as well, that the blowout would happen when you didn't expect it to happen, when you thought you were in for a barn burner. And then the tight game would happen when, more often than not, maybe 100% of the time, when you thought Georgia was just way more talented, was going to come out there and knock them around. This one's different. This one's just different than those. And here lately, we've seen Georgia blow them out when they're supposed to blow them out, outside of the last time they were in Sanford Stadium, which, you know, that one's a game that even a couple Georgia players said that one's kind of stuck in their craw a little bit this week. I think Trayvon Walker mentioned it last night, was like, yeah, I still think about it because I was on that team and, you know, we played really bad that day. Defense didn't necessarily play bad, but the offense sure did. Turned it over four times. And if Georgia can avoid catastrophic stuff like that, they should be able to run away with this game. Listen, Stetson Bennett is not delivering the mailbag, but we're still going to have it on the other side of the break. So let's take that break real quick and we'll see you on the other side.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Imagine sleeping in the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's iconic sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee plus 15% off your first order with code Odyssey. So head to B-O-L-L and Branch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
All right, first question, Q-Dog 22. UGA has had defenses ranked in the top 10, top 5 last couple of years. What makes this defense different? I'm going to start us off here because I've got something that I think that really does make this defense different, and I think it's something that Georgia has wanted and has tried for years, but this one does it better than all of them. Is, you know how guys when – you know, you get the run game going and maybe it's not great to begin with. Maybe you haven't worn them down enough. And then all of a sudden it just starts to get better and better. That's how this Georgia defense is. It's going to wear opposing offensive lines down. You're going to have guards and centers and tackles as physical as they are, tight ends and running backs, as physical as they want to be, as mentally tough as they are. They're eventually going to fall short. They're going to fall into that Marshawn Lynch thing where they just got hit in the mouth too many times by too many fresh players, and Georgia just wears teams down. And I think that's what makes this defense have so much potential to be special. We're only two games into the year. They still haven't allowed an offensive touchdown. And not necessarily with the pass rush or the run defense as much as it is just the accumulative effect, the body blows. It's Georgia's defensive line treats opposing offenses and flips the script on them. Because they do to offenses what offenses want to do to opposing defenses. And that's just wear them down and demoralize them. And you know, Rusty, you've said it a bunch of times, and, you know, you kind of, you know, I guess maybe borrowed a little bit from Barton Simmons, that boa constrictor effect is eventually you're just like, I got to get out of this. I don't care, okay. Win, lose, draw. I'll tap if I've got to. I'll get out of it. I just got to go. And I think that's the kind of the effect Georgia can have on opposing teams. And I think that's what makes this Georgia defense different. What about you, Rusty?
I mean, yeah, you summed it up. I don't have to say much there. You know, that Georgia will suffocate you. Barton Simmons, boa constrictor term. You know, they just wear you down. And I can't imagine trying to game plan, trying to pick out a weakness, because you have to pick your poison there. Georgia's right now doesn't have to have an extra guy in the box because they control you so much with their front four. And then the two or three guys in behind them can, oh, yeah, they can run too. So, you know, there's not really much to say other than this team. This is a lot of fast guys. I was thinking about right there when you talked about that, Jake. You know, you're sitting there and, you know, Jordan Davis and Devontae White, you know, trot off. And then here comes Trayvon Walker. Here comes, you know, Jalen Carter and all those guys, that next crew. And you got to be thinking, my goodness, man, where, you know, how do they get these guys? So, you look at that, and you know it's kind of frustrating as a team. You got to get to beat Georgia. You got to have some early offensive momentum, I think, to because those guys feed off of that, man. Once you start seeing them bouncing around and all those things on about that third or fourth series so far, what I've seen, you know, they smell blood, and that defense plays a lot faster. I think a key, anybody playing Georgia, I think you got to have some early offensive success to try to make them kind of, you know, even keel a little bit and see if you can get some movement up against them and score some points.
Make them adjust, make them scramble, like, you know, knock them off their spot a little bit and cause them to create some adversity for them. Yeah, I agree with that for sure. Kip, make us interesting here. Figure out some way to a different angle to come at this thing from.
The fact
no
that
pressure.
Give them some rat poison, Kip.
Well, I mean, that UAB game, we're all in the press box watching that game, watching Georgia once again hold a team to less than 200 yards, not give up, you know, a single point defensively in that game. So now it's 3 points allowed after two games. And lo and behold, Devontae Wyatt wasn't even on the field, you know.
Yeah.
One of Georgia's best defensive linemen was not on the field. And you just look at the fact that over – I think it's over 40 guys with a tackle now, and you got like 11 guys with a tackle for loss. And like I said, Devontae Wyatt yet to have a tackle for loss, Quay Walker, Timon Mitchell, Tremel Walther, I mean, Warren Brinson, those guys haven't even had a tackle for loss yet, but you know it's coming. So you're going to have double digit guys that, you know, are in opponents' backfields. It's that depth in the front seven. It's just a defensive front that we haven't really seen at Georgia in probably, you know, the last 15 or 16 years. You start looking at those early, you know, 2000s defensive fronts where they were rotating out guys that were playing on Sundays. That's the difference here. I mean, Georgia, gosh, we talked about they went, what, 8 years now without a defensive lineman getting drafted. And Malik Herring, you know, would have broken that streak most likely if he doesn't get injured right there at the end, you know, trying to prepare for the draft. So there's some guys on this defensive front they're going to be playing on Sundays.
No doubt.
There are multiple guys. Trey Scott's going to have multiple feathers in his cap when it comes to recruiting because, you know, there's some difference makers up there. And so we can bring in some of these guys and rotate some of these guys in the second and third quarter whenever teams are normally wearing down. I mean, we talk about Georgia wearing down people offensively and being able to continue to rotate those running backs in the third and fourth quarter and win, you know, kind of get away from other teams in some tight games. Georgia's defense is kind of built up to where they're not going to wear down, and they're going to be able to, if they need to, do some heavy lifting in the second half when they're playing some of the better teams in the schedule. So I just think it's that depth in the defensive front, and it's the fact that it's not just the, you know, Adam Anderson. You got N'Kobe Dean out there. You got Channing Tindall in this last game trying to do his best Roquan Smith impersonation, just chasing down the ball from sideline to sideline. You got some athletic freaks out there and guys like Trevon Walker, Nolan Smith, Jalen Carter, guys that have the ability to be disruptive but also just are physically more athletic than what most teams have on their roster. So I just think it's that depth, and it's Kirby's recruiting paying off. I mean, you just look at the roster from top to bottom, and you know, if there is an injury or if they're rotating a guy in, there's not a drop-off in the level of play. And that's really the key there, is that you can continue to rotate guys in. You're not worried about, is this guy going to be able to play up to the standard that we're trying to set for Georgia football? That's what Kirby's mantra is now. They talked about that at the game, is playing up to the standard. And they have two and three groups of guys who can play up to that standard for Georgia. And that's the biggest difference between this defense and, you know, some of the other impressive defenses that Kirby Smart has fielded over the last 5 or 6 years.
All right, these next two should go pretty quick. Tag 3 says, do you think Stetson Bennett will return? Do you think Kirby Smart might encourage that? Very possible, and absolutely he should. If he doesn't, I don't know what's wrong with him. But I think he probably – I mean, yeah. I don't care if that guy's your second or your third guy. Good guy to have on the roster. Good guy that can come in a pinch and play football for you. He should absolutely encourage it. Rusty, what you got?
I agree 1,000%. And I think everybody saw the post-game comments of Kirby. He talked about Stetson Bennett in front of the team, the adversity. He's, you know, he was a starter. He got hurt, came back. Now he's third string, getting barely any reps. He's asked to lead the team this week, and he has SEC Performance of the Week, Offensive Player of the Week. So, yeah, there's no question that Georgia would try to encourage him to come back. Now, will he? That's something that we'll all, you know, that'll play out in time. But I feel very confident that Georgia would certainly love to have Stetson Bennett come back another year next year to have him in the mix. And who knows how this thing plays out. But you got a guy that's very, you know, he's starting to get very experienced in SEC play, which is crazy to say. But I feel very confident that Georgia would welcome Stetson Bennett to stay another year and to have him another fall.
What about you, Kip?
I mean, it's up to Stetson Bennett at this point. I think every single game he gets to go out there and perform against Power 5 FBS programs, regardless, he's establishing himself as a guy that could start at other programs across the country. So I think, you know, it really is up to him. Do I want to continue to compete for the starting job in, you know, a talented quarterback room? Or do I want to go somewhere where I know I could start? And Kirby Smart mentioned, I mean, I think that was the early recruiting pitch he's already making to Stetson, that talking about how much he loves Georgia football. He went ahead and put him out there as a guy that just lives and breathes Georgia. And so, I mean, that'll be put to the test, and Kirby Smart's going to possibly have to do a little bit of recruiting there. That is, you got two kinds of recruiting now. You got the recruiting of trying to get guys to sign up and play for your roster coming out of high school, And you got that recruiting of keeping guys in your roster with the transfer portal right there. And so you have to continue to let your guys know that the opportunity is there. Nothing's going to be given to them, but they have a chance to play meaningful football for a program that's competing for championships. And, I mean, that's obviously something that brought Stetson Bennett back the first time. And so keeping him there, I mean, again, it's just going to be up to the Kirby Smart and this coaching staff to convince him that he should.
Do we lose Kip?
We might have lost Kip.
Kip.
We might have lost Kip. He's,
I mean, that's a good frame for Kip right there, at least.
Georgia and give it another go next year.
Yeah, we lost you there for a second. You had like a freeze frame of your face
up
there.
You had a good frame. You had a good frame on that, so don't worry about it. It won't be a GIF anywhere, but it could have
been. Too many people screenshot me, probably crashed it, you know, wanted to get a new profile photo.
Hey, don't worry. At least you didn't stick your hand in there. People's going to think that's a foot. They're going to think these are toes.
Oh.
All right, Rumple Teaser says, what is the most effective way to use James Cook? I've said this over and over again. I think you got to find a way to put that guy in foot races, and you've got to put him in foot races with linebackers and safeties and find ways to get him. And not necessarily just in the passing game, but, you know, stretch plays, outside zone, toss sweep, stuff like that. I feel like you got to get him out on the perimeter. He had a really impressive little inside run this past week where he kind of got wrapped up and almost taken to the ground and found a way to stay on his foot, showed a lot of balance on that play. That's something that I've been critical of him in the past. But I think most effectively is to put him in foot races. You saw it last year in the Alabama game twice. One was on that go route where he scored that long touchdown. The other was on a little flat route on his third and short where basically they just sprinted him straight toward the sideline and said, hey, turn around and look for the football. And Dylan Moses couldn't quite catch up, and they hit him for the first down. So I think that's the way you use James Cook most effectively. And, you know, you saw it last year on the angle route that he ran against Kentucky, I believe it was. No, at Missouri, when he scored a touchdown against Missouri. Those are the ways you use him, and we'll see if Georgia kind of gets into a groove that way. Anything you guys want to add as far as James Cook, or can we move on?
That's pretty spot on there. They better find a way to use him, because I'm telling you, the NFL is going to find a way to use James Cook.
He's just so good. And they definitely tried to give him more looks in the last game. I mean, all those inside runs maybe had some people scratching their heads, but I mean, they're trying to see what he can do. We've gone through here, and the idea of James Cook has been more impressive than maybe the reality. Now, I mean, I've thrown out the fact that he's averaged more yards per touch than any running back with over 100 touches in program history. It's like 6.6, 6.7 yards per touch. So you know that when he gets the ball, usually good things happen. It's just, you know, at some point you're trying to, you know, put that round peg in a square hole, so to speak. And it's not really, he's not really that kind of guy. But as Rusty said, we've seen guys like Alvin Kamara not exactly get fully utilized in college, and then boom, they get to the NFL, and lo and behold, I mean, they're elite talent. And I think James Cook, he has that ability. It's just, you know, it's finding that way to maximize what he brings to the table. And I think when you have a deep running back room, sometimes, you know, it's tough to give him enough carries to really get him lathered up and going. You just have too many good players back there. So I don't know if we'll see the best of James Cook at Georgia, but I think that when he does get those touches, as long as, you know, the teams haven't already scouted and schemed for that whenever he's on the field, if he's going in motion or not like that, but he should still be able to be highly productive for Georgia, you know, as the season goes on.
Yeah. The gulf between the big plays, the best plays from James Cook and the worst plays from James Cook is wider than most running backs. I mean, I think that's one of the things that kind of throws you off guard there with him. Desire. And I've always loved this name. I know this guy personally, and I've always loved this name, D-E, and then he spells it Zaire, like Eric Zaire. Desire says, who's the freshman DB you expect to play the most minutes this season? Kamari Lassiter. I think Kamari Lassiter's probably on the cusp of entering the DB rotation at some point, at some time this season. He's probably the closest one to the field. I'd probably go Nylon Green next at some point, because I think that potential is going to show through. Rusty, who you got there?
So far, it's Javon Bullard. I mean, he's, you know, I mean, that's kind of surprised me. I had to actually look and see who that was last week playing so much. So there's a lot to be left there to determine. You know, you usually start seeing after that bye week, start seeing who kind of gets in there. But I'll be interested this game and in Vandy, because I think those are both two games opportunities for the second half. You can get some younger guys in there. We'll see kind of how that rotation plays out.
Absolutely. Who you got, Kip?
Well, just go ahead and dismissing. I'm not going to go on a technicality and call Kelee Ringo just because he's a redshirt freshman. I'm assuming this is true freshman. I mean, it's all injury based. I think that right now you're just rotating those guys in. You got kind of a core group that, you know, you tread out there and you know, can give you a good number of snaps. But I do think that Nylon Green may, you know, he might push for more playing time as the season goes on. I think he's the guy that just with more and more experience out there, he's going to earn more trust and from this coaching staff. And I think as far as just his talent and his athleticism, I think he can be out there as, you know, that third cornerback in situations and give you just a little bit of everything and kind of bring some game-changing potential as well as far as, you know, if he's able to go up there and catch a ball and bring it down. I think, you know, he's got some big return upside there as a DB as well. So I just think as far as just his overall explosiveness and his overall talent level, I like Nylon Green. I just think that, you know, we're all just kind of speculating at this point because I do think it's going to be injury based. I think if the starters out there now have played well enough to continue playing out there, it's just I don't know if any of these guys are going to push those guys for starting minutes. But if any of them has the capability and the talent, I like Nylon Green in that scenario.
I know Georgia fans really want to see probably one of those guys find a way into the sixth defensive back role at some point, just because, listen, it's not sexy. Dan Jackson, he wears 47. He plays in the secondary. He's a walk-on. Nobody wants to see, you know, that guy out there. But he just continues to be out there, continues to do a good job. And, you know, I think if you polled most fans, they would love to see Kamari Lassiter or Nylon Green or even Javon Bullard slide into that sixth defensive back role and figure out a way to get on the field that way. Last question, Fry Dog. Love this question. How can UGA use Darnell Washington and Brock Bowers on the field together when Washington returns? It sounds – it really is kind of simple, but I still love the question. I mean, listen, two tight end sets is something they're using already with Brock Bowers and John Fitzpatrick. I love the three tight end set. And I love the three tight end set with Brock Bowers on the field because you get a tight end on the field that you almost have to treat like a wide receiver. You know, you've got that kind of speed. Listen, Georgia's longest play in the last, I don't know, 7 years is by Brock Bowers, okay? I mean, it's a tight end. I know it was against UAB, but the one previous to that was against, what, North Texas? Reggie Davis had a 99-yard catch against North Texas or something like that. So, I mean, listen, I mean, Brock Bowers can do a lot of different things for you. He can line up in a lot of different spots for you. And you can really put some teams in conflict with a three tight end set, with him being that third tight end, the guy that can motion across the formation and do some stuff and make you pick your poison as far as the run game goes. Rusty, how do you see getting Washington and Bowers involved together?
They're definitely going to try it because you get a guy that can run so fast and you get a guy with the physical, you know, 6'7.5", maybe 6'8", you know, you put those guys on the field and it causes stress. And as an offensive staff, as an offensive coordinator, you love that word to cause stress on the defense. In preparation to make sure you have the best matchup you can, and can we defend these guys on the field at the same time? So I think you got to play both of them a lot based off what I know. But, you know, we'll deal with that when they get here. But I think that what you were talking about, Jake, as far as three tight ends, they certainly could go that route, you know, and have that little tight package, that little bunch package right there, have all three of those guys. And, you know, it's really, you know, you start looking at, you know, 6'3", 6'5", and then 6'8". It's hard to – maybe 6'6". I'm not sure what Fitzpatrick is, but it's hard to defend length. And then you throw in the element of Bowers and what we saw last week, that kid can roll. So it causes stress when you start thinking about those guys, and I think that's the best compliment I can give as far as what we could expect out of them. It's going to cause some headaches for teams preparing for them.
Georgia started that Florida game last year with three tight ends, two running backs, ran a truck sweep, and it was 75 yards to the house. And, you know, there's some more stuff you can do out of something like that with a guy like Brock Bowers in the game. Kip, what's your take on this?
I mean, I think the Tampa Bay Bucs have shown us you can't have too many good tight ends out there. I mean, you just look at what they roll out there every week. I mean, getting back a guy like O.J. Howard, you know, they already have Gronk out there. I think a big guy like Mike Evans is, you know, he's not a tight end, but he's got size out there. I mean, that kind of size is just really, really impressive. And I think it allows them to do a lot of things. I mean, you know, Cameron Brate as well. Those guys were all Tom Brady's best friends last year. And if anything, you know, it might not take away snaps from John Fitzpatrick as much as you might be looking at, you know, Kyaris Jackson when he's healthy and Ladd McConkey fighting Brock Bowers for snaps. You just put him out there in the slot. And I mean, he's already shown he's got the athleticism to basically play any pass catching position out there in the field for Georgia. So yeah, Kirby Smart praised him as being, you know, a powerful blocker and a willing blocker, but you don't need to limit Brock Bowers to, again, playing the tight end position. You just put him out there and let him play whatever position gives you the mismatch you need to make explosive plays. And if you got a guy like Darnell Washington out there as well, I mean, that just makes it that much more difficult for the opposing secondaries. Because if you take Brock Bowers in motion or Darnell, you know, they're going to have to move with that guy. And it's just really, really going to make life difficult for that secondary just because of the athleticism and size both those guys really present out there. So it's just another weapon. I don't think that Todd Monken's going to be worried about, you know, having too many weapons. I mean, I think if that's his biggest issue when he heads into game plan session, he's going to be a happy guy because he's going to go out there and just build his resume up. And I mean, now, like I said before, he's got a full off season to do that. As these guys continue to get healthy, he's going to be able to use every play and give whoever's at quarterback more weapons at their disposal to really go out there and attack defenses. So as we said, as Georgia can, you know, if they continue to get healthy, the sky is the limit for this offense, and they should be able to really, really put up some impressive numbers over the next couple of months.
The ever elusive jumbo offensive weapon, Brock Bowers. All right, guys, that's all we got for this show. Listen, Junkyard Dogcast, powered by Dogs 24/7. Go subscribe on YouTube. We'll be back with you tomorrow to give our predictions for Georgia, South Carolina. But we're going to wrap this one up. I'm Jake Rowe at Dogs 24/7. They're Kip Adams and Rusty Mansell from the same place.
Baseball season is in full swing, which means you need to listen to Fantasy Baseball Today, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. Join Scott White, Chris Towers, and me, Frank Stample, every weekday as we recap every player from every game. We'll talk waiver wire ads, drops, players to trade for, prospects who could make an impact, and everything in between. Make sure to download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, the Odyssey app, and everywhere else podcasts are found.